Hey. Hey. Have you ever noticed how we're different and the same and the same and we're different and we're different and the same? All kinds of people.
On the Talk of Muncie, WMUN, All Kinds of People, hosted by Dr. Joe Moshevitz, getting to know the people of Muncie and Delaware County, Indiana, in a way you've never heard before. It's another way we're using our voice to build our community from Woof Boom Radio and 92.5 FM, 1340 AM, WMUN. Here's your host, Dr. Joe.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to All Kinds of People on WMUN, the Talk of Muncie. And I have to say that prior to today's program, I was outside the studios, assuming that our guest was going to fly in and do a landing of some type. But I've got Michael Smith, the director of the National Model Aviation Museum in Muncie, Indiana. Mike, thank you so much for driving to Woof Boom and being a guest today. Welcome to All Kinds of People.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, we're not very far away from the station here with the International Air Modeling Center, so that made it convenient to just kind of jaunt over despite the wind.
Yeah, the wind is a little rough, to say the least. So, Mike, I want to back up a bit because you've got a very interesting background with grandpa and farms and family. And take us back, if you would, to your hometown, brothers and sisters. What was it like in terms of elementary school, high school, some of the memories you pulled back from the family?
Well, my father was in the U.S. Army.
Okay.
So
you traveled around.
Traveled around a lot. The longest we really had ever lived any place was when he was stationed in Italy, and that was 3 years. So prior to that, a lot of different places. So growing up, we had a lot of different schools. So we never really had a home per se, but home in some regard was our grandparents' farm. Okay. Which was in Ohio, just north of Dayton. And so that was always the base in regards to being able to always go back there. It was always the same. We'd go back in the summertime and spend the summer with my grandparents. We'd usually go down to Cincinnati to my aunt and uncles and visit with cousins and so forth, and then go back home. Sometimes it was we would move in the summer, so we'd be there while my parents were moving. And we'd get to the new location and get ready for the new school year.
What were some of those memories, though? I'm trying to put myself in a position of maybe every 3 or 4 years having to pack up and move on. And also, I was not aware of the Italy situation, but those experiences had to be very unique and different because you were constantly dealing with a different geographic area.
Yeah, constantly dealing with different schools, different teachers. It made it difficult in that some of the schools and how they were structured because you were in different states.
Okay,
they would have their classes lined up a certain way so that you would follow a particular order. And then another school would have it slightly different. So you might not have had the classes that they needed.
I never thought of
in their order.
Curriculum being different to the point where
and school sizes. I went in high school, I went from a school in Massachusetts that I probably would have had a graduating class of, goodness, maybe 100 people.
Okay.
To a graduating class in El Paso that we had, I would say, close to 900. The incoming freshman class at that school was over 1,000. So going from a tiny school to a giant school was a drastic change.
Yeah. But obviously, when the time permitted, some really good breaks at Grandpa and Grandma's.
Yeah, and the 5 and 10.
Yeah, and that 5 and 10 that you could walk through and grab onto a variety of things.
Every summer we'd always get a water rocket or a balsa glider. or a wiffle ball, something like that, to occupy our time outside in the summer. I recently came across a picture of myself with my dad. Goodness, I must be maybe two, and I've already got a balsa glider, and he's got a balsa glider.
Ah,
so we're
a little aviation stuff going on with the glider. Thank you.
He was interested in aviation through his uncle, who had been in the Navy and PBYs during the war, and then worked for Rockwell over in Columbus, where they did the Vigilantes and the Broncos. He actually got to go into the factory with my uncle and sit in a Vigilante cockpit that was on the assembly line. So that, I think, all really pushed him towards aviation. He was actually a veterinarian in the Army, but was a civilian pilot and an instructor.
So there's a little tie into this aviation thing there.
Yeah. And then my mom was a history teacher. So any place we would move, we'd always go to the museums, in particular the aviation museums close by. We'd always be going to the air shows that might be occurring. So was always around or going to, like I said, history and museums. And then I actually had wanted to go into the military myself and either go into the Navy or the Air Force as a pilot. But my eyes, they did not want to go. So that changed that. And I kind of decided that the only way I could still be around the aircraft that I really enjoyed was to go into the museum field. So in high school, I was already volunteering in museums. I volunteered at the Air Force Museum over in Dayton in high school.
Okay.
The War Eagles Air Museum out in Santa Teresa, New Mexico, I volunteered. Then went to Ohio State and got my undergraduate specializing in military history. And then Wright State University there in Dayton, got my master's.
Yeah, got your master's there.
Yeah, yep.
I was quite fascinated by the degree in military history. Before the program, we were chatting. I'm a Michigan grad, thank you, so I can respect the Ohio State people. It's all the Big Ten, thank you.
Exactly.
The Big 19.
Whatever it is now, or will be.
So given the family's military background, that created quite an interest as you went from school to school and the family moved around and you always plugged into where those museums were. Did that really set the tone for your work at Ohio State in pursuing that degree?
Yeah, I had always been, again, going to the different museums and so forth. I really enjoyed history. I enjoyed reading. It was funny, to this day, when we get birthday or Christmas gifts, invariably, their books on aviation, particularly for me, I like World War I aviation. So I really try to find the autobiographies or biographies of the pilots. A lot of those were published in the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Okay, yeah.
So it's always neat to try to find those.
Talking about historical administration, I have to assume that part of your job at the National Museum is to really detail the history of a lot of this. That has to occupy a lot of time.
Oh, goodness, yes.
You're clearly into it. Are there some things you've discovered in the last year or two within the Muncie situation that you find quite intriguing?
In terms of Muncie, it's really amazing. One,
I mean, this is the home of a national museum of aviation.
Yeah, and people want to know how it got here. So that's always one question we get.
Okay, well, you can throw that into this, too. That's fine.
So the AMA moved out here because we needed a very large flying site. Our headquarters had been in Reston, Virginia.
And it
was basically just a building there. And every year we host the National Model Airplane Championships. That actually started in 1923, and in 2026, we'll be celebrating the 100th National Championships. So as part of that, the AMA ran the event, organized the event.
Okay.
And after World War II, the Navy was a massive supporter of model aviation. They saw that a lot of their pilots during the war had been model airplane enthusiasts.
Okay. We're going to come back, and I'm quite intrigued by the upcoming 100th anniversary. I'm with Michael Smith, the director of the National Model Aviation Museum. And stay with us on WMUN for all kinds of people.
This is WMUN's All Kinds of People with Dr. Joe.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I'm going to try and bring us back down to the ground from the air talk we're having with Michael Smith, who's the director of the National Model Aviation Museum, also the Academy of Model Aeronautics. And right before the break, Michael had just kind of slightly mentioned that in 2026, it's a 100-year anniversary. So let's back up to that a little bit. What's the big celebration?
So the National Model Aviation Championships, that event was in 1923. That was the very first one that an individual could win. What's pretty amazing, though, is that model aviation had actually predated the Wright brothers by more than 100 years. People were flying models, rubber band-powered airplanes by the 1870s, steam-powered airplanes.
100 years before the real airplane?
Yeah, yep.
Okay.
And we've built reproductions of some of those airplanes and have them on display in the museum. So you can kind of see that evolution leading up to. But once the Wright successfully flew, that's when almost immediately the hobby started. Because prior to that, it was more research. People were trying to understand flight. But once they knew that flight was possible, goodness, by 1909, you had the very first model airplane club already being formed in New York. It was formed by a lady named Lillian Todd. She was the first woman to design and have built a successfully flying full-scale airplane. But she started the first model airplane club. By 1915, you have the first model airplane national contest, but it is for clubs. And it's held in 1915, 1916. It isn't held during World War I in 17 or 18 and held again in 1919. But the same club wins all 3 years. So the trophy is retired to them. And it is a very famous club. It's no longer in existence out of Chicago. And it had a lot of very famous modelers of the time who were in it. So it was kind of a powerhouse club. But they were forward-thinking enough to say that without a national championship, there wouldn't be anything really to strive or make developmental changes. So they actually worked with the National Aeronautic Association, and in 1923 were able to get a model airplane event as part of the full-scale air races in St. Louis. It was called the Mulvihill event, and it was actually named after Bernard Mulvihill, a NAA vice president who gave the money for the trophy. And in the museum's lobby, we have an exhibit. We actually have the trophy still, and it's still awarded every summer. It actually is taken out on site for that particular event. It's a rubber band powered event. But as part of that, as we said, in 2026 will be the 100th event. It also had a gap during World War II where the national championships were not held. So that's why it's not in 2023. That's why we've got a couple of extra years. Yeah.
So you've got some pretty serious planning to do.
Yeah, organizationally, they're looking at all of that. We last year had the 100th anniversary of the first NATS, obviously in 2023, kind of like the Indianapolis, the Speedway, where we have two different celebrations. But yeah, in 2026, it will be a celebration for the actual 100th event.
Okay. Whoa. So I'm aware also from chatting that bikes have an interest in your life when you're not up in the air someplace.
Oh, yeah.
With the planes.
Bicycles, airplanes, bicycles, and cars. Those are the three things. But bicycles, yeah, I couldn't really actively play some of the contact sports. So I competitively swam for a little bit. And then when we moved to El Paso, one of the gentlemen who worked for my dad raced bicycles.
Raced bicycles. Okay.
So I'd always been kind of interested in that. And he kind of took me under his wing and helped me. He loaned me a bicycle frame that was lighter than what I had, and got me into racing, and I joined the military cycling team that was there at Fort Bliss and raced there for a while. I also raced for the El Paso cycling team, and we raced in Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. And one race, we actually rode our bikes to the border, or we drove to the border, unloaded our bikes, rode our bikes across the border into Juarez and did our race there, and then rode back across the border and put our bikes into our cars and came back. And then I raced in Ohio when I was doing my school there at Ohio State. But when I went to grad school, I just couldn't ride enough to kind of
keep
myself.
You had to study.
Yeah, unfortunately. Because in undergrad, it was funny, in undergraduate, my friends and I who raced, all the other guys that we kind of hung around with in the dorm or whatnot would have all their classes in the afternoon because they would hang out late at night doing other things, and so they'd slept in.
Yeah, okay.
Well, my friends, we would take all of our classes starting at 7:30 or 8, try to get them all done by lunchtime.
So you can get out on the bikes in the
afternoon. Yeah, and then we'd ride all afternoon, and then we'd come into the commons to eat dinner just before they closed. And it was always funny. The ladies who worked there kind of laughed about us because we were, well, I'm about 6 foot. I was the same height I was then, but I only weighed 140 pounds. So we would come in, and you could eat as much as you want. You just go get another tray of food.
Yeah.
So at the end, all of us would have 4, 5, 6 trays of food, and we were these skinny guys. And at the same time, the Ohio State football players, some of them would come in, and there's a slight difference between us and them in terms of size.
The defensive lineman versus the bike rider.
Yes, they would have the same stack of plates. So you could always tell when there was a new lady working because they'd point at us and kind of giggle as we walked up.
It's the bike riders coming through. Thank you. It's the bike riders coming through.
Yeah, so I really, really enjoyed that, and I continued even though I couldn't race. I still rode. My wife really enjoys riding, so we've really taken advantage when we moved out here to Muncie to enjoy the trails.
Yeah, the greenway and everything
else. Yeah, so I've ridden all the way down to Richmond and all the way to the north side, but we've also done the rain ride, the ride across Indiana several times. That's 160 miles in one day. So we've done that. And it's something that I've always really enjoyed getting outside and doing.
It had to be a little interesting as the family moved because of the military life.
Mm-hmm.
From location to location, you had to reinvite yourself into a new group and find the group to continue some of these things.
Yeah, I think that is something that military brats, I think, have difficulties with, that moving around and always trying to find new friends. You never really have lifelong connections, per se. I do know that the teachers who commented in some of the schools that we went to, they really enjoyed having military kids in the classrooms.
Okay.
Because they brought a much broader background.
Yeah, they've moved around to different parts of the country.
Into the classroom. So they had a lot more of that as the classroom was talking about different subjects, those kids could interject and bring a lot more than they might otherwise be able to with kids who had just lived there. So I do know that they were appreciative of military kids being there.
Yeah,
but it was always a case of trying to find the new group of friends who were doing things that you enjoyed doing.
And Mike, as we start winding down, you got bikes, you got airplanes all over the place, but there's a little interest in cars on the side, thank you.
Yeah.
And in these closing minute or so, just a quick thing on how do we get into the cars?
So my dad was always interested in cars, in particular MGs, and so
There's a collection someplace.
So now we've got a 46 MGTC, a 52 MGTD, a 61 MGA Coupe, a 69 MGB GT, and a 79 MGB. And I get to babysit some of those cars. But my wife and I, that's our ice cream car. So we go to all the local hangouts sandwiches and ice cream. It's one of those cases where you kind of flip a coin and decide what car we're going to take tonight for the ice cream.
Perfect. I'm with Michael Smith, everybody, the director of the National Model Aviation Museum, and I encourage all of you to look it up and get out there and do some serious looking at a great historical site and a lot of events coming up in the summer as well if you're into any kind of aviation. Michael, thanks for driving out, not flying out.
My pleasure.
I hope you have a good upcoming summer season out at the Aviation Museum. And to all of you, I hope you tune back in again next week at 92.5 to Talk of Muncie with all kinds of people. Dr. Joe saying have a good week.